Web API, making services easier. That's pretty much been my life for the last 9 months. I've had systems that are running from the keynote to Sure, which is an open data platform. Web API was the heart of that. I've used systems that are mobile and connecting to that. And I've also got internal systems connecting to mobile applications or secure systems. It's been in a range of environments, but it's been really, really cool. It's been great to go a deep dive into Web API and see what it's about. But what is it really about? For me, it's about making services easier. It's about making services easier with the new features that are coming out in Web API 2.0. Be they integration. How do you bring your services together to make it easier to bring components together and integrate with different services? Easier to configure. How do you actually make sure that the routes, the requests that are coming into your server get routed through to your code? How do you make it easier to share your code between different sites so you can get access to it? Or how do you query it? How do you get people to get access to your data that's sitting behind your Web API? So I'm going to go through that. That's what my session's really going to be about. It's going to look at what are the different tool sets within Web API 2 that are actually going to make this easier for you. So we're going to go through these four main things. We're going to go through OWN, Open Windows Interface for .NET. We're going to go through attribute routing, how are you going to connect the incoming routes through to your code. We're going to go through CORS, cross-origin resource sharing. So how do you share your code from one website to another? And finally, we're going to go through OData, a way of sharing your data out so people can discover it and have a design behind it that can actually use it from inside Web API. The first thing I'll say, though, is stop. If you look at the Visual Studio RC that came out, I'm going to be using all the daily builds for what I'm, all my demos today. So there are some changes from the RC from where you are now and what's going to come out in RTM. So there'll be some changes around potentially how routing's handled, and there's some additional features around security. But generally, it's relatively the same. But so just be aware, if you go back to your desk today, some of the features here I'm going to be demoing are out of the daily builds, not just out of the RCs. So let's, before we start, just give you a couple of links and give you a bit of context. The first one there up on the link is an idea of what's in Visual Studio 2013 in the release candidate. The next one is looking at CodePlex, and it's the roadmap of where the team is from a web point of view and from Web API point of view. The team has been really open in terms of what its features are, what its roadmap is. If you go to that link, you'll see all the features that are there, the specifications of the extra code that I've created. So that's one other place to look at. And the last one, I'm going to put all the code for this session up on GitHub. So if you worry about the code, if you want to go look at it later, go grab it from GitHub and you can get an idea of what that information is. So let's first dive into OWN. What is OWN? So OWN is an open web interface for .NET. And that's the goal. And OWN, I find it's really, really exciting. Because if you look at the kind of applications we've got today, they tend to be pretty monolithic. You've got your application sitting there that may be an MVC application, maybe a web forms application, a web API application. But generally, they're pretty much tied into the platform beneath it, IIS. So what OWN does is it allows to have an open standard to break that relationship between the web server and the components. And you can break it so that you might have your MVC application like you've got at the moment, but you can factor into that other pieces of modules of code, whether it's Web API, security, or SignalR. And you can take that one more step further. You can change that and break it apart so you can remove that dependency on .NET and IIS and break it out to a self-host. And when you have that kind of environment, you now have the ability to possibly change your web framework, but also make sure that your web code, that your security, your SignalR are all working in the same context. And for me, it creates an exciting possibility because it makes something that .NET normally isn't at the moment monolithic into something that's much more modular, composable, and making it easier to put stuff together. So the security story that you see in Visual Studio 2013 is all based on this security model. So the same security that goes into Web API works across the whole stack. It works inside your MVC application. It works inside SignalR. And that's one of the advantages of OWN. So before I launch into my demos, I'm going to be using Script.cs. So if there's anyone, how many people went to Glenn's talk earlier yesterday? So yeah, we went for quite much. Okay. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be picking up from where Glenn left off, and all my demos are going to be using Script.cs. The reason I've done that is I want to try and get one page. Try and get the essentials of what the code to you, so you can actually see what it is and what the essential pieces of the code are. So let's launch into the first demo. Look, it's Luke Owen. Okay, first demo. So we started up and we've got one script.cs file. And it's got some script packs coming in here. So we've got some dependencies. We're saying we're going to start up an OWN self-host, which means we're going to start up a new web server, and it's going to be hosted just inside this executable. We're pulling in some other dependencies. We've got one for NancyPack and another one for browser. So NancyPack is just an open source framework using Nancy that gives you a web framework similar to what MVC is, but it's working in a self-host environment. And it's going to be hosted up on port 8080. Now what this one here has got, it's got two things in this kind of pipeline of what OWN is. So what OWN's got is it's got a pipeline of requests coming in. So you can imagine the request comes in, it gets handed to the first component. In this case here, we've got a piece of middleware. And this middleware is going to say, okay, it can either take that request or it could hand it on to the next piece in the chain. So what this first piece of middleware is going to do, it's going to capture that and it's going to say, hello world. And it's not going to bother handing it on to the next piece. And we're going to go through and just have a look at that. And then after that, if it got past that, you would see that we've got a Nancy plugin that will actually display the current date and time. So let's start that up. Certainly can. How's that?
Yep.
Excellent. How's the font size of that one? Fine? Excellent. Okay, so there we go. So we've got a hello world. So what's happened is that first module's got that request, and it got greedy. It didn't decide to hand it on. So what we're going to do is we're going to flip back, and we're going to go back into the code sample. And we're going to say, here, we're going to comment out that first using. So we're going to say, we don't want to use that middleware anymore. And when we take that out of the pipeline, Nancy's going to be the first one that takes that request. We compile that again and run it. And this time it's come up with Nancy. So that's just a simple example of OWN, just showing how it's just a series of commands. It's just running a pipe and running series. It seems simple, but the simplicity is its power. It allows us to go, we've got a very simple middleware there, but you might take a more complex example where you might want to do redirecting to a different site, or you may want to do caching, or you may want to do compression, or you may want to do rate limiting. You want to stop people hitting the site as fast as you can, and you don't want your application to care about that. That's what OWN can offer you. And because Web API has now taken a deep dependency on OWN, it gets all those benefits. It allows you to use those components. So when you go back and look at Visual Studio 2013 and look at its security story in terms of how that works from an individual account or a corporate account or an Active Directory account, that's all built on security and it's built on OWN because that first piece is a security piece and after that is kicking in your web API. So we head back to the main deck. So that's OWN. So the key points of OWN, the way that it works, it's got this syntax, use. So you use XXX. So it's got a set of extension methods. So you might go use Web API, or use Nancy, or use SignalR. So each of those components you can just fit in and request. And the ones that you'll see in the samples there, you can see like a use Microsoft account, or use Google account. And that will fit in the security to log on to the Live account or log on to your Google account. And then if you come in and if you're looking through NuGet, you'll see that the Microsoft Owen. And it's more than just what Microsoft's there. There is a whole series of open source components that also use the open standard. So you saw I was using Nancy there. You can mix and match all these components together and fit them in with your web API service. The next one, attribute routing. Quite simply, what attribute routing is about, how do you take your request and how do you map it through to your code? And the big thing there, and the change that I made, is how do you configure that? How do you make it easy? Who likes putting whole lots of configuration in one place and kind of going, how is that working? How did that route actually go from that bit of code to that bit of code from that URL? And that's probably a pain point that people have heard. So what if there's a new thing that's been added to the framework, and it was an open source contribution to Web API to add attribute routing. And it changes it so that rather than having a bit of code that you normally have of configuration, routes, and you're putting a route in one place in your configuration file, you can now annotate your class with a route attribute. So you can move what would have been that traditional map HTTP route and move it closer to your code. And that opens up a series of new possibilities that weren't there before and gives you new power inside in terms of routing. So let's have a look at this. So let's get an example of what attribute routing looks like inside Web API. So we'll close that first demo. I'm going to go to routing. Start. Okay. So what we've got is this one here has got a require on Web API, and it's going to create a Web API server, and it's going to get a configuration coming out of it. And we're going to clear out all the routes that are there at the moment that comes with this Web API pack. So we've got an empty route table, nothing there. In this example, we're going to go through looking at an API and go through these kind of example pages in terms of what the controller offers. So I'm going to open that up. I'm going to run it from the browser, just to give you an idea of what this API offers, and then we'll drill into how the attribute routing actually makes these pages go. And a compilation error. And not all paths return a code. And we'll make that return. Empty string. Control B. Okay. And more server errors. Excellent. Back. Do that right up for the moment. Okay. So we've got a service here that gives you books. And the first one we turn up to this books is just giving you an XML information about that book. And we can look at that, we go look at the URL, and we can change that. So if we zoom into that, just see what I'm typing in there. I'm going to API. Books, and I can go one. So I'm going to get the first book and get its ID by ID. Or I might want to go get some additional details on the book, because this first book only has some limited information on that book. And I can go get the details on that book. Or I might want to say, okay, I just want books. I may want to search for all the books that are in the fantasy genre. And it just gives me a query just for those books inside fantasy. Or you might say, well, I like this author here. I'm going to grab that, and I'm going to say, I want to go look at authors and look at their books. I can just say books. So it gives you an idea. This is the kind of examples we can actually do with this API. So let's have a look at that from a code and actually see. So the first one we've got here is we've got a new method that we can put on our configuration called map HTTP attribute routes. So what this helper method does is when the code starts up, it goes and looks through your entire application, looking for anything that's got this route attribute on it. And if it finds the route attribute, it says, okay, I'll go automatically add that into that routing table. So rather than you having to prescriptively go to one place for your configuration and type out all the different routes, it would automatically detect them and put them into your application. So let's have a look at what those routes look like. So that was our old way of doing it, and we can do it with this map HTTP routes. So the first one here where I copied out the greet, what that greet does is if you had a route up at the class level, what that's going to say is, if anyone comes in looking for a URL of books, every action here, if I want to get some information, I want to update some information, I want to delete information, is just going to come off that one route for greet. Or, if we go further down and look at our books controller, we've got another keyword there called route prefix. So rather than going and typing API again and again and again and again, we just have one route API and it will apply that to all the actions inside this controller. And then we go through and we look at, so we've got now got the route book, so that's that first page that I went to. And from there, we've got some new syntax. Has anyone got an idea what that's going to do there? What's the curly brace ID int going to do? What it's going to do, it's going to allow, it only searches if it's an integer. So it allows you to restrict only integer ones going to come into this method here. So we had two examples there. We had books, one. I'm going to go search through for the book by ID. But I had another one, another URL there, that was books, fantasy. So I wanted to search by genre. And this process allows me to say, okay, it's going to hit the first one here. It's going to hit the first route here, which is books int. And it's going to match that first. It's going to fall into this controller. It's going to go search for the books by the ID. And same thing for the books details. I want to get some more details on that book. And then it falls through to this books genre. So the idea is what you can do is you can restrict the type of information coming into the controller, and it gives you more flexibility about how your route matches through to that bit of code. The next one is interesting from a point of view if we go from authors. So normally, you would normally put authors out into another authors controller, and you have books in a books controller. What this allows you to do is mix the pieces of functionality together. In this case here, I'm asking for all the books for a particular author. So rather than separating that code out into two different pieces, we can bring that together, say all the books related information where I'm searching for books by a particular author can live all in the same place. And I can put those routes together into one controller. So I keep all that information in one location. The next one down here starts expanding on that a bit more. So the next one we're going to say, we want to look at all the books were published on a certain date. And then we can apply a regular expression to it. And what the regular expression does, it gives us the power to say, okay, people choose dates differently. People might want to put their dates as year, month, day. It's with hyphens in there. Or they might really want to go, okay, I want my date to be year slash month slash day. And this way here says both of those two routes will end up in the same location. And that second one is established by having this star on it. What the star tells it is, okay, this is a special case. What we're going to do with it is we're going to say the rest of that route is going to be matched as one item. So that way we can support slashes in it. So in the case we had type of date. So this all seems technical in terms of what does this routing give you? But it gives you the power and flexibility to actually put the routes in a place that is simple. I don't know how many times I've seen people go, how did it get here? How do I get these conflicts in terms of my routing? This makes it really clear in terms of what the code is. I can pick out that control, take it somewhere else, and the routes come with it. So that is, switching back again, attribute routing. Key points for attribute routing. In the configuration, you have a new thing called map HTTP routes. Once it finds that, it goes and looks through for these attributes, and it finds out what they are and adds them to your routing table. And for those people that have had problems with routing before, this is an easier way of solving those routing issues. Next one is cause. And what causes is cross-origin resource sharing. Does anyone have this kind of scenario? We've got site A and site B, and we want these two things to work together. So the example here, you might say, okay, I might sell books, and I want to go offer another site. I want to go put some comments on my books. It's another site, and normally from JavaScript, it doesn't allow you to post information from one site to another. So we go through this, and we might make a request for the from the first site. The browser might request this index page from the first site, and it's going to work out, okay, the origin is site one. And then it makes a request to the second site saying, I want to go query information from the second site. And what it's going to do there, it's going to say, okay, based on that origin that you gave me, you're coming from site one, it can make a decision of what it wants to do with that data. It can say, okay, I'm going to accept everything coming from this location and allow it to post, put, delete information onto this from the first site. Or I could say, no, I only want it from particular sites. So it gives you the power to mix up these two features here together, allowing you to get that goal of integrating your two sites together. So the way it works, you can have get, post, post, delete from that first site, it passes an origin across. And on site two, on the it does allow access origin control, which says, okay, where do I want to accept requests from? Let's go have a look at that. Before we do that, though, one thing I say with cause, it is generally going to work only in the newer browsers. So newer browsers is IE9 and up. And if it's IE9, you can have some issues where there is differences in the way that it handles cause between the two environments. Okay. And we start up when you go to the cause demo. And start up. So this is going to start another service, and we've got two services here. We've got a localhost service, and we've got something existing on another port. So these are on two different origins. And we're going to start up a server, and it's going to have two different servers. We're going to create one server, which is going to come in on the service URL, and we're going to create another one on the website, and it's going to start communication between the two. So if I start that up, so it goes and loads it. So this is going and loading a list of books from the other site. So it's made a request from the first site to the second site and got some information back. And normally that wouldn't work. So if we go open up the developer tools and go look at what's happening underneath. And we re-request that page. And we increase the font size. We've made a request to books, and it's got an origin here. So I say, I'm coming from 1234. And it's saying, OK, we allow access origin control from star, which means we accept this server accepts requests from any server. Now, normally, you may not want to do this. You may want to only have trusted partners that you want to open your site up to. So what you can do is we can go change the configuration inside cause to allow that. So we're going to come back up to here. In the configuration, there's a new extension method called enable cause. And as part of that, you can say, where do I want to go accept my requests from? I come across, and I can say, at the moment, saying star. I can go change that to be http foo.com. So what that's going to do now is it's going to say, this server is only going to request from site if you've got an origin coming from foo. And if it doesn't match that, it's going to say unable to load content. So what it's doing under the hood, we re-request that again. That now that request is coming through, and it say you can't load the access from that because the site is not allowing us access from that site. So what it does is puts the power in your hands. So where do you want to get your access to your code from? You can choose where it wants to come from. So you can say, I want to open season. I want to make my API open to the world or not. You can choose the scope of what you want to do. So looking at that code example we had, that could get pretty laborious to look at. You could end up putting site foo or comma, put site foo, whatever else. And it could be hard to maintain. So normally in a production site, you might want to make this a bit easier. You might want to customize this. So what you can do is you have an extension point on this. So you can actually go change the policy of how your cause works. So if we scroll across, I'm going to uncomment this one here, which says set the policy provider. And so what I've done is I've created a custom rule. And that custom rule has the same code that was running inside that attribute. So you might want to say, I want to get my policy rules, I might want to go grab that from the database and cache it. Or I may want to get it from my configuration file. So you're no longer having to bound to just typing that into your code. You can change how do you want to put your configuration. What do you want to do? It's in your control. So that is cause. The key points for enabling cause, your config enable cause. And that enables it to apply to every controller inside your code. Or you can go put an attribute on particular classes or particular actions, and you can say, where are the origins? What are the actions? What are the methods that you want to accept coming into this? The next one, the final one I want to look at is OData. And the key things here is around design. I think the power of OData is it allows you to have a data model, you can then discover the information that's in your model. So if you went to Amy's session this morning, OData solves a lot of these issues. And whether or not you adopt it or want to look at it, have a look at the way that it's done it. It's solved a lot of issues in the way that it handles OData that could apply to your services as well. They can look at your entity data model and build some code off that. And one of the biggest misconceptions you normally have is the entity framework is not the entity data model. You can define your entity data model, which is your model of your code and what you're to show to the external world, separately from your internal code. Now you should be able to go through that and show what you can do that and give the power out of that. You can discover the code. So if you go along to a host and you say, go to the first site, we'll go to that first page and we'll say, here are all the resources that you can get, query, and look at. And it's done in a standard way. There's a standard format for OData, specifying how you can reach the data. And then you can ask the questions like, how do you want to limit? What operations do you want to do? Because you might not want it to be open slather. You might want to say, okay, I only want to accept queries on these particular fields here. Or I only want to order it by these columns. Or you may want to ask the really important questions is, okay, do I want people to suck down as much data out of my server as possible? Or do I want to limit it how it's doing it? The one for the OSC, the one in the keynote, they've got millions of rows of data from 40 years worth of collections of rainfall data. And they want us to say, okay, I want to give information at 1,000 row increments. I don't want to go load millions of rows out of my server at once. And then finally, we may want to extend it. It allows you to extend how it works. So what we've done is, one of the examples we got for the OData, is you can basically change what's the information that you can come out of the server based on who you are. So if I log on as an anonymous person, I may only want to see these 10 fields. But if I log on as an administrator, I want to see all the data. There's an extension points in there to allow you to change what the data that you actually see. So let's have a quick look at OData. Start it up. Build the site. And in this case here, we've got a new thing called a books controller. And behind that, we've got an OData controller, which is going to serve the data up. And this is going to give us all the data for a particular query. So it's going to load it. And it's getting all the books information. So where does this change from what we had before? We had an API that served up books before. What the OData does is gives us some additional information on top of that. We can start doing some queries saying, I want to filter all the books that start with the author R. Or I only want to go dollar select. I want to select just the book ID and the title out of that. So you can see when you're designing your systems, it gives you extra options out of there. Putting a dollar select, why is it important? If I had an image and I wanted to go pull all the data out and I didn't want to pull out the image with every request, what I could do is just select out the subfields that I'm looking for and pull that down. It's a win for the client, it's faster for them, and it's a win for you because you've got a better experience that you can just choose the information that you want in the way that you want it, which is different than having an API where you've got to prescriptively choose the fields you want and choose the objects that you want. It gives you the power to change it, and it puts the power in the end users. So we flip back there and have a look at what the code behind that. So come back to that point of the power behind it. You've got an OData controller, and I've got a queryable, and it's got a page size here. And the page size says, okay, I'm going to only give it pages two at a time. And then if they want some more data, they can ask for the next page of data, and the next page of data. And that gives us the power to actually control the information on our side. So we can also put other attributes on there to actually go, I only want to order by these particular fields. I only want to be able to support the starts with function, but I don't want to do a contained search anywhere inside my string. That is the power of OData. So you can actually control that. So if we take that one step up and say, okay, we've got a book, but we're controlling our whole domain model and we want to go put it out. We're throwing everything out. But we want to change that so we can actually just say, I only want particular fields. We can extend that out and get a better view of what that information looks like. So we've got some additional classes here. At the start of this, we're just doing, at the moment here, we're just setting up a convention saying, okay, let's look through this and we go for the book object. It's going to automatically create this entity data model for us. And we're starting the server up for that. But it doesn't give us that much control because all we're doing is we're exposing all the fields out. We want to change that so we can actually make it, extend it, so we can actually see more information on that. So if we open that, we're going to open up another example here for untyped. So the untyped one looks exactly the same. It's got an OData controller behind it, but it's got a new thing here that I've created on top of the pieces that are there called an untyped OData query. And what that does is it allows it to go set all the information getting out is going to be dependent on how I set up my configuration. So if I go down to the configuration block that we were just at, I've got this helper for going and creating an EDM model. And from this entity data model, I can choose these are the properties that I want the end user to see. So I can see a book ID, a title, a genre. And I can change that. So I say, okay, I don't want these fields here to be seen by a user. If I run that now, it's going to create an entity data model and map it from my collection of books that we saw before and only show me a subset of information. So if I run query, we only see small information. I'll open that up and look it up. I only got a book ID, a title, a genre. So we can limit it. The power of the way we've used that in some of our systems is it allows us to dynamically change the output based on who we are. So we've got a system that's going through and dynamically picking out who you are and based on who you are, changing the output out. It gave the client the ability to go, we want to self-manage our service. We don't want to come back to us all the time and go, can a code change depending on, I want anonymous users to see this, I want to see administrators to see this, or the special group over here, I want to see them some extra fields. This is giving us the ability that they can actually go change it so they can shape the view of what their data coming out based on who they are. So this is something that we've built on top of the bits that are there. It doesn't come out of the box, but it shows some of the capability and the power and the foundations that are there to actually enable you to create bigger, more adaptable solutions. So the key points out of OData. Is have a look at it, you're starting up, easiest way to start up, you've got a model builder convention. And you can give it your entity model, and it will create an entity data model for you from that object. And then you can go quest a model from that and pass it across to your routes. And it will automatically map the books, authors, other entities across to your controllers for you. And you can put a queryable attribute onto the class. And once you put that queryable attribute onto the class, you can control how people can query it and put other information like the server-side pagination. But overall, it's making services easier. All these features are adding up to a sum total of making services easier. It's making them easier to integrate. It's making it easier to integrate putting pieces together, so you can take a security story and add it in with your web API. You can add in other pieces of this Owen middleware and integrate it into your story to actually improve the value and make it more modular. If you just want to write your code, and then worry about security. Let somebody else take care of that as another component. It's making it easier to configure. You can go take your routes and information and attach them onto your code and make them more adaptable. Make them more flexible to fit the way that your APIs work, the way that you design them. It makes it easier to share. So you can share your information between sites and opens up possibilities that you can say, okay, I've got my API, I want to have the broadest reach as possible. I want to get out there and share it between different sites, and we'll get around the limitations for particular sites so that we can share information and create new business opportunities around sharing information. It makes it easy to query it. It gives you a range of options. And you can go from just a standard API control where you've got full control. It's your API, you can do exactly what you want with it. And you can slide the scale to the other end and say, okay, I've got this entity data model, these are the fields I want you to expose. You give me a whole lot of plumbing. I'll tell you how I want to paginate it, I'll tell you the actions that I want you to give it on it, I'll do the sorting on it, and you can work it out, and it will take care of all those things for you. It's up to you to decide which end of that spectrum that you want to go on. Do you want complete control, or you want to take advantage of a framework like OData to give that features? I want to give some time for any questions. I've gone through a whole lot of, the key features out of OData. Has anyone got any particular questions they'd like, having gone through that of what the features are, how it can help you, any thoughts around what the new features of ASP.NET Web API can do for you? Yeah. Go for it. So the question is, what is the value of self-hosting? Why would I do that? And I also mentioned about Katana. I can think of some examples of where self-hosting could be really useful. I could go create a Windows service, and I might want to have an API to go talk to my Windows service and interact with it. So I might want to say, okay, I'll make a query of it, and I want to find out what the state of that service is, or start or stop it, or interact with it. You can embed that into your application. So a service might be a good place for actually self-hosting it. Or you might have a desktop application and you might want to remotely talk to it. So you might want to take a web API and build that into your application. So does that answer your question about the first part there of where self-host might be useful? Glenn's got another example. Okay. So the other one Glenn's saying there, it's the other example that you could use is that you could use as a worker role inside Azure to self-host a server with all the other components there inside Azure without having to spin up a whole site. Okay. And there's another question there. Yes. So the question is, you've got a current OData service. How is it going to affect the current OData service if we go to the new version? The answer is it shouldn't, because there are some new dependencies that it takes. It's mainly adding on additional functionality. So what the team has done is they've consolidated the way that they handle their OData. So it's the same components that's being used for WSF data services or Web API or other OData components, and they've got one DLL that does that. Basically, they're adding additional functionality. Like the dollar select that I showed, there's new functionality that didn't exist before, and it's just kind of baked in. So it should be both being compatible with the specification, but it's extending it and adding more. So basically, to answer the question in summary, it's adding additional functionality that shouldn't really affect the current servers that you have running there. Any other questions? Yes, up in the middle. So the question is, what is Katana? Katana is a project run from Microsoft, which is their implementation of the OWEN specification. And it allows two pieces. Katana can be run as an OWEN pipeline that can sit on top of IIS. So it's an important point that IIS, all the current services that you have there, the web forms, ASP.NET, MVC, Web API, there's already an rich ecosystem there. And what they've done is they've added this OWEN pipeline to all that existing functionality. So you can take all your existing code and leverage in security, or you might want to go add in caching or rate limiting, and you can put that in this OWEN components and OWEN middleware. The other part of the Katana project is another that allows you to do self-hosting. So it takes that same DLL, and I can embed that into my application and self-host that same OWEN pipeline inside the application. So in summary, Katana is Microsoft's implementation of the Open Windows interface for .NET. Yes, did that answer your question? Cool. Any other questions there? Yes, Glenn. Okay. Okay. So what Glenn's question is, he's asking, what's the difference between there's a built-in feature inside Web API, which is called message handlers, that can intercept requests specifically within Web API, as opposed to middleware, which is components that run across the whole stack? I think the difference for me, and I think the value of middleware is it allows it to run anywhere. So very much a message handler is very specific to Web API. It'll just run within that scope. So when a request comes in Web API, you can put some particular code, and when it comes back out, it can decorate or add some additional features. But I think it's kind of pigeonholing it into the Web API and just that one piece of technology. I think middleware has the ability to say, I can apply it across all of it. If it goes before my existing MVC site, my Web API, my SignalR, and I think it has the ability to be something that could be cross-cutting across all of those things. So it takes security, like the implementation Microsoft got at the moment. You take security and take one security story and apply it across to all my components. If I was to do a message handler, the message handler is only going to be very specific just to my Web API. I can't reuse that piece of code somewhere else. So the question is, if I just want to stuck with a Web API and I don't want to necessarily is there a difference? And possibly not. I suppose it really depends on Web API will work either way, whether or not it's self-hosted or inside an ISDX, it'll work either way. I think it really comes down to which you find easier. And I think OWEN is something that's really new, and people are still getting their head around it, and it's a change of people's mentality using middleware. But I think you're going to see an explosion of people starting to use middleware a lot more and become another way of doing it. And I think you'll probably it really depends on where the community direction goes. Where do people want to go? If you start seeing people writing whole lots of middleware components, people are going to say, that's the way to write it, because there's so many examples there, I'll start using that, rather than necessarily a niche technology. I think from a technology point of view, it doesn't make too much difference from a person point of view. But it's going to really make more of a difference from a code point of view. What are people in the community doing? Where is the hot source of development? What are people actually doing? Where's the go-to example? Do I go to a Glen Block example from a middleware or a message handler? Who's the community leader? What are they writing it in? And people probably will follow on after that. Cool. Any got any questions from this side? No, excellent. Yes.
What happens if you have the same
So the question is, if you have, what do you have the same route on two different methods? The default behavior is basically there's an order of precedence. So the first route that's met will be matched and routed to first. But if you have a case where you want to really explicitly control the dependencies, there's an order attribute that you can go put on your attribute route, and you can say this is a routing attribute of one, and then you can two, three, four, so you can put an ID on them, a number on it, and it will order them by that ID. So you can choose the precedence of the routes. So you've got control of, it doesn't necessarily need to be go logically down the code, that will be the way it'll get it. Or you can actually change it around and you can explicitly set, what this is the order that I want these routes to fire in. There's nothing, no magic that is happening here. It's still the same hitting the first route, but it's just making it easier for you to actually control that and have a finer control of what's the order that the routes are going to get hit in. Does that answer your question? Excellent. Any other questions? Yes. So the question is there any built-in scenario for caching? I don't think so at the moment, no. There's nothing that's there. It's like CacheCal and other components will fit in there and offer that capability. But caching is one thing that you may want to think about, especially if you want to start doing this portability. If you want to take it out of the IIS stack and go put it into self-host, some of those components that are there are different. So everyone's aware of the system.web is the big monolithic piece that IIS runs under. When you go outside that and actually go out to look at caching, it's different. Then some of those dependencies aren't there because you haven't got a dependency on the whole big web stack, so it makes it much more agile. But because you do that, some of the pieces like caching aren't there. So you can't depend on those if you want to start doing things outside the IIS context because they're really tied into the engine of how IIS works. But there are other plugins like, say, CacheCal or other components that can do the similar kind of functionality. Does that answer your question? Excellent. I think there's another question. What was the question, sorry? Is Oron working on Mono?
It will.
Katana will or Owen? Yep. So the question was, is Oron working on Mono? And the power, to bring it back, Owen is just a interface. It's just a very simple specification. At its heart, it's just a series of name and value pairs. It's really, really simple, and its simplicity is what makes it easy. Whether you want to implement that on different stacks, whether or not that is on the Mono stack or on the .NET stack, it'll work either way. I mean, you find the team that actually is behind the Katana project, if you go look at that on Coplex also, it's got its own project, and they're a really open team. The actual people running behind Katana are really open. They also have their roadmap of where they are and the features they want to add. And they're really trying to be as inclusive as possible to open up .NET as far as they can to as many people. So that answers your question? Excellent. Any other questions? Excellent, okay. So what it's all about is it's making Web API easier. I encourage you to really, if you're not using Web API at the moment, go have a look at it. Some of the new features are going to make it easier for you to write to your services. If you're already using it, take the next step. Look at these extra features and see, do they make sense for you? And do they make it easier? Related content, the sessions already had one from Glenn Block around Script.cs. Laura did a great one about Web API with hypermedia links. Those ones are really relevant. It's really going to come back to that first part. Look at the part of the spectrum that you're on. I can look at my G Archibald on Twitter, or you can look at GitHub. But all of those really are places that you can go look at and get an example of what the code is. So really, I thank you. Have a look at Web API. Go make it and make services easier if that's what you want to do. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the conference.